right. Good evening and welcome to the Wednesday, August 18th Public Works Advisory Board meeting. As we get started, please be advised that five members are here, and so we're ready to go. And before we get started with the meeting, could we have a moment of silence? All right. With that said, next item is the acceptance of the agenda. If anybody would like to move to accept the agenda.
So moved.
All right.
Second.
And that's a second. We accept the agenda. Moving on to announcements. Does anybody have any announcements?
I'll make this announcement now, and then we can also repeat it at the end of the meeting when we adjourn. But next month's meeting, which is on September 15th, will have an early start time, 3 p.m. It'll be at the multipurpose room in the community center at Kennedy Way, and that is for a special meeting on transit issues. So it'll be a public hearing so people can voice their concerns on the transit issues. The reason for the early start is so those users that use our transit system can use Morro Bay Transit to get to the meeting. If you tell the driver that you're going to the public meeting, your fare will be waived. So it'll be a free ride to and from the public meeting. So that'll be at an early start time, 3 p.m., and it'll be a different location, the community center on Kennedy Way in the multipurpose room.
Okay. And just a note, I thought that was today, so I showed up early today. And so I will make sure to show up early again next month. The poor fellow who was cleaning in here, he looked at me like I was nuts. I was, too, because I was in the wrong place. All right, the next item we have is written communications, and we have two. We have a letter from Mr. Grilly on Kern Avenue. He did a seal coat in front of his home, and he attached pictures, and that went out into the city right away, and he asked the city to compensate him for that. And then, Rob, you sent a letter to him explaining that. Would you like to explain any of that?
Basically, the seal coat doesn't meet city specifications for a maintenance seal coat is what we would use for our streets. It's not a product that we would typically use on city streets. It was mainly associated with his own personal driveway, so we did not compensate him for that work.
Okay. But anyway, thank you, Mr. Grilly, for sending that letter. Yes, ma'am.
So I have a question. Does that mean that the city would have compensated him had it met the specifications? Are people to seal coat into the right-of-way and get reimbursed?
Well, work within the right-of-way requires an encroachment permit. So technically he should have come in and also got an encroachment permit for his work within the right-of-way. Work within the right-of-way needs to be done by a licensed contractor with an A license. A lot of seal coaters do not carry that license. Typically it's done as a larger city project to and it's not just seal coating. What we would do if we were sealing a street would be called slurry seal, and it's a sand slurry based. So there aren't any of the local seal coaters that provide that service. It's a bigger job. Unfortunately, they're all out of the area that do that type of work. But no.
And SPA, talking about parking spots in front of the in the Front Street lot on the bottom of is that Beach Street? Right there on the Embarcadero, and they have some 20-minute time slots that they would like to be taken out. And so, Rob, is this something that they approached you with, or this a letter coming from the public? So how do we deal with it?
Mr. Laurie is also here to speak on this issue, so he can speak at the public comment. what we want to do with this. Those time parking spaces were put in the late 90s. From what I understand, it was mainly a dirt parking lot. Everybody wanted to park on the asphalt rather than on the dirt. So before we would evaluate, do a little traffic parking study down there to see if those 20-minute spots are still needed. If they're not needed, then they could be removed. So we would propose to do that evaluation. Our engineering staff would perform that.
No, Mr. Lawyers, you have wonderful rationale and explanation of the whole process. Since that is the last written communication we have, we jump into public comment. Would you like to speak, sir, first, or do you not want to speak?
No.
Okay.
Good evening. I'm Tom Laurie. I live on Front Street down here by the 20-minute parking. I gave you some of the history, and that's pretty clear-cut. There's a lot of new parking that's been added to the Embarcadero since these slots were restriped for short-term parking by the city, and the slots were restriped to help the merchants out, who were actually the only local retail outlets at the time. There was a hotel next door, the Bayfront Inn, it used to be the Adventure Inn, and then the Pacific Cafe was the little restaurant there where Frankie and Lola's is now. The Pacific Cafe was only open in the evenings. And our lot was vacant at the time, but we've infilled. We've got a lot of commercial visitors serving commercial businesses, which require more, longer times to park. And we feel that since the purpose for which these slots have been installed has passed, because the parking has been filled in on the Embarcadero, that they should go away. I think it's good that Morro Bay is helping businesses like they're doing on Morro Bay Boulevard by, apparently there's a committee that's restriping some of the slots there. But, everybody needs help in this economy. So I'm just asking you to deal with this parking business across the board in a fair and kind of a reasonable way. And I'm not asking for any special favor. I just think there's a logical argument for this parking to go away and parking to be installed in its place, which serves more of the businesses down there. Half of the building, which houses the merchants who were originally there in 95, is also residential, and it's a small building. So the residential people don't park in those 20-minute slots right in front of their building. They park in the full-time slots in front of our building. So, I mean, there's no way to police enforce who's parking where down the Embarcadero, whether they're employees or residents or not. So the fairest way to deal with it is just make the 20-minute slots go away, because they're essentially a grant of special privilege to these businesses on the corner. Thanks.
I wasn't clear from reading your letter if you represent all the businesses that were mentioned here. I believe there were six businesses that would be impacted, and I wasn't clear if they all are in agreement on this.
I don't represent them. I'm not on retainer.
But do they all agree with this proposal?
Well, they have mixed feelings about it. The Bayfront Inn would like to have parking slots which are striped exclusively for their use. And I don't know how much lobbying they've done about that. But they don't, the farther people get away from those parking slots, the less important they are to them. And, I think the bakery that we have in our building is actually the busiest spot for people coming and going rather than sitting down and eating. And we originally tried to get the slots moved over there, but somebody talked them out of it, and they're still on the corner. So to answer your question, no, I'm not representing all the property owners down there.
So there really isn't a unanimous...
...go-hour parking. And it's suitable for residents to live down there, too.
just curious about who is involved in this
sure.
proposal.
Actually, I think that 20-minute parking down there is totally meaningless at this point. I meet with a group of friends every Friday morning down there in the bakery for coffee shop, and I notice that I might be in there. We might be in there for 3 hours sitting around chewing, right? Come out, the same cars in the slot as it was when we came, you know. There's a Dodge pickup that's parked usually in that first slot, and it's there all the while, you know.
Yeah,
the police don't have somebody to send around every 20 minutes to chalk tires.
Yeah,
you know. So they're not going to have it. It's a waste of time. So whether you leave them like they are and forget it, or take down the signs, doesn't make any difference. Just you might as well take down the signs and forget it. And I guess you have to have this. You have to do that, don't you?
Yes, that's correct.
But the practical thing is just take down the sign, because in effect they're down now, or they got a bag over them because nobody looks at them. That's the way it is. And I believe in doing things the way they are.
Well, that Dodge pickup occupies a 20-minute slot because he claims to be handicapped. He's got a handicap sticker. So he parks there all day. He's parked there every day for 10 years, and he's going to park there for 10 years more. So it doesn't matter whether that's a 20-minute slot or a 60-day slot.
So, Rob, to jump in here, Mr. Lurie, did you have anything else to add?
No.
Okay. So the process now, did they appeal to the engineering department to go through this?
We've already planned to take a look at this, do some traffic counts out there, see how the parking is used, and make those changes that are deemed appropriate.
Well, Mr. Lurie, thank you for your letter. All right, moving on, we have another pub. We have someone else for the public comment, Mr. Smuckler.
Yes. Excuse me. Thank you for having me here tonight. And as you probably know, I am, since our last council meeting, the board's representative, or the council's representative, to the Public Works Advisory Board. At our council meeting, we discussed ways and ideas that we could help create a better connection with our different advisory boards and be more accessible to you, at the same time give you a better ability to communicate with the community. So one of the ideas that we approved was to have a liaison with each of the advisory boards, and so I chose you as my first pick, and we were able to work it out. So my goal is to attend every one of your advisory board meetings, and definitely extend an invitation to all of you to contact me if there's things that you are interested in PWAB being involved with, or things that you think the council in general should be aware of that you're hearing about from the community. I know as you're out there, community members see you as a person to approach for issues. Bless you, Jenny. We also are going to be extending an invitation to all the advisory boards for a presentation approximately quarterly at the beginning of a council meeting, and that's going to rotate through the different boards. So I'm sure you're going to discuss that as that time comes forward, to be able to update the community through a council meeting about your activities and some of the different things you're working on. So overall, I think it's really... Your board plays a really essential role for the community because of the subjects that you discuss. You know, our utilities and the public infrastructure is essential for our well-being and our ability to be productive and have a good-looking, well-operating town. And so your role is really important to us, and we want to make sure from the council side that you know that, and that we're here to work with you as best we can, and we're open to ideas going forward. That said, I have a couple of announcements. One is last night at the Planning Commission meeting, the Morro Bay Citizens Volunteer Tree Committee presented the master tree update for the city's street tree and public tree list. And the Planning Commission reviewed that and the work that you guys did in reviewing that and forwarded on with approval to the council with the removal of the palms and also the blue gums from that list, which I'm sure some of you will be happy about. So that's going to come to the City Council at some point in the future as a public hearing item. So we get another chance to hear from what we might really like to have involved with our future plant and what elements we might want to improve upon as far as what we can see physically. So we have some dates that I'd like to let you know about, and I'll also be working with the newspaper to announce this via press release, and also I will make sure to send each of you an email with these dates and directions. So our Santa Paula tour dates are going to be August 29th. That's a Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. and also September 8th. That's a Wednesday from 10 to noon. And we will also be touring the Pismo plant on August 30th, Monday, from 1 to 3, and September 19th, a Sunday, from 1 to 3. And really appreciate the cooperation of both plants and their operators for offering a weekend date as well as a weekday date. We really wanted to make sure it was available to anyone from the public that would like to tour. And if someone is interested in carpool opportunities, they're free to email me or call me at 772-7668, and I'll be creating some lists about those different dates and see if we can match people up, so take advantage of a shared ride. So thanks again, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Noah. All right, that's a big one, for the wastewater treatment plants. And so we have our next item is a public comment, and is Mayor Peters and Chief Olivas, and they're going to show us a video and on distracted driving.
Hello, board members. Thank you for taking the time out of your meeting to let us do this presentation tonight. Chief Olivas is here to help talk about the distracted driving issue, and he has to leave in like 4 minutes. So I'm going to let him talk first, and then I'll come back.
Good evening. Thank you for the invitation to be here tonight. Thank you for Mayor Peters for inviting me to talk on this important topic. I think that after you watch the video clip the mayor has provided, you'll have a clear understanding of the dangers associated with driving while texting or using a cell phone. It's really a movement, and you got to consider it as a culture change or a shift from a practice that was once okay to use a cell phone. But now I think we're all acutely aware, and I think after you see the video, it'll really bring to light the dangers and tragedies that this practice can cause. In law enforcement, we don't view a collision caused by texting or cell phone as an accident. It's a similar philosophy we share with drunk driving, because it's not an accident, as the name implies. It is something that is completely preventable. In drunk driving or impaired driving, it involves really two decisions. One's to take something or a substance or alcohol that would impair your ability to drive, and the second is to actually get behind the wheel of a car and drive. For using a cell phone, it really involves only one decision. You're already driving a vehicle, and the decision, or sometimes it's become a habit that we need to break and that we need to work on, is reaching over, picking that device up, and begin using it, because the ramifications can truly be tragic. In 2009, the Morro Bay Police Department issued almost 100 citations to drivers for using the cell phone. We've been very fortunate. We haven't had any serious injuries or fatalities related that could be associated to using a cell phone, but even one of those would be one way too many. If you're seen driving a vehicle in Morro Bay and an officer is able to conduct a traffic stop on you, if they're not going to another call or something like that, I can assure you that you will be receiving a citation if you're caught using your cell phone. At that moment in time, I consider that officer as potentially have saved that person's life or somebody else's by stopping that activity. So we're asking you not to be a distracted driver, as you'll see in this video, and join us in making your vehicles a no-phone zone. Thank you very much for the opportunity tonight. And the reason I'm leaving, I'll give a quick blurb. Our officer, Doug Collins, who has been away in Iraq for a year is flying back into San Luis Obispo Airport tonight. He'll be arriving in about an hour, so we're getting a contingency to go down there and meet him, which we're all very ecstatic about, having him back safe into our family. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks for that presentation, and glad to have Officer Collins back. All right. Mayor Peters.
Okay. When I first got my cell phone, I got a hands-free device because I wanted to be legal, and I noticed that even with that, my attention was not as sharp as it was when I was just driving without talking. And I couldn't figure it out because, I mean, I talk to people who are passengers with me all the time. Why would it be any different talking to someone in the air? I don't know why, but it is. And several months ago, I caught an Oprah show that was, the topic was distracted driving and specifically talking about cell phone use and texting. And you may be thinking, I'm okay, I'm careful, I can multitask, or my kids know never to do that. But are you, and do they? Please watch this video and then take the No Phone Zone Pledge. All of you have one in front of you, which you can also do on the internet at oprah.com/nophonezone. The life you save could be your own or a stranger's or someone you love. Thank you.
What began as a show has turned into a movement because of you. And we're just getting started because I'm beyond passionate about this issue. And I'm not going to stop until we can put an end to the deaths and the injuries that have happened because of people talking and texting while they're driving. Texting while driving is just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than driving drunk. So please, gather all the drivers you love and watch this show together. And it's not just texting behind the wheel that is the equivalent of driving drunk. It's talking on the phone, too. They are both considered forms of a dangerous practice called distracted driving. Almost 6,000 people die and 500,000 are injured every year in crashes caused by drivers whose hands or minds are off the wheel. Studies show that a driver just talking on a cell phone is 4 times more likely to get into an accident. Distracted driving has become an epidemic, and more states are finally beginning to lay down the law. So far, 19 states and the District of Columbia have banned texting while driving. And in 7 states and the District of Columbia, drivers can only use their cell phones if they are hands-free. Use your voice to encourage everybody you know to think twice before reaching for your cell phone the next time you are behind the wheel. And I know everybody thinks that they can handle it, but you can't. You can't. Now, why does the state of Utah have some of the toughest distracted driving laws in the country? Here are 2 reasons why. Take a look.
2 people have died in a crash in Cache County. The men were driving when their car was hit. 38-year-old James Fafaro and 50-year-old Keith Odell died at the scene.
An investigator at the crash site suspected texting was involved when he saw the driver of the other vehicle, 19-year-old Reggie Shaw, texting on the way to a mandatory drug and alcohol screening. No drugs or alcohol were found in his system, but sure enough, cell phone records confirmed Reggie had been texting from the time he got into his car up until the moment of the crash. Distracted driving has become an epidemic in this country with tragic, tragic results. 500,000. Just think about that for a moment, because, you know, we hear these figures on the news, you hear about the car accidents, you see it, and if it's not in your family, it doesn't even register. Today, what I'm trying to get for all of us is for it to register. 500,000 people are injured, and 6,000 people, 6,000 people that belong to somebody's family are killed because drivers are talking and texting and emailing instead of focusing on the road. And until we as a nation decide we're going to change that, those numbers are only going to go up. Reggie Shaw admits that he was texting when his car crossed a median and clipped another vehicle, sending it into oncoming highway traffic. Here today to say that you were guilty of texting. Were you texting or on the phone?
Texting.
You were texting. And how often had you texted?
I would say pretty close to 100% of the time when I drove.
Really?
Not only me, but my friends when I was in high school. And
how old are you now?
I'm 20, almost 23.
Almost 23. And you were?
I was 19.
19 when this happened. So it was common. It wasn't even something that you all thought about.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting to me as an older person, you know. I think, to me, it seems so obvious that you can't do it, that you can't do both at the same time. But I know for your generation, that's just what you all do all the time.
Yeah.
Nobody ever thinks that maybe this isn't a good idea or maybe we should wait till we get to where we're going to. Everybody just automatically texts and drives.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I just never thought about it.
Never thought about it.
I, you know, I think back now, you know what, that was a poor choice by me.
Yeah. How did you feel when you realized that you had killed two people?
Felt terrible. So, you hear something like that and something you never want to hear. Ever. It never gets easier.
How has this affected your life?
This affects my life. No, I don't know.
I know you're glad it was only 30 days, but now that you're out, really, seriously, was 30 days in jail enough?
You know, I think about those 30 days in jail and what I went through and how hard that was for me. And I think about the two lives that were lost. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if it was enough.
Thank you for being honest and answering that question. So for most of us, getting behind the wheel of a car is the most dangerous thing that we do all day. If you're talking on the phone, you're four times more likely to get into an accident. If you text while you drive, you're eight times more likely. So before your mother's accident, I hear that you were a big multitasker in the car.
I was a real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
My car was my office.
Mm-hmm.
I was just under the same misconception as everyone else that if you've got that headset in your ear, you're okay.
Mm.
And so I had my headset and I drove. And you're not safe. It doesn't protect you. It's not where your hands are. It's where your head is.
Mm. It's not where your hands are. It's where your head is. Yes.
Many people think they're safer drivers. A lot of people think they're better than average. They think that they can talk and or text while driving and see other person who's at fault.
You know, it already is the most dangerous thing all of us do every day. But now with people texting and on the phone, it's like having a multitude of drunks out on the highway, isn't it?
Well, certainly with texting, it's quite a bit worse than having a bunch of drunks on the road. So when you talk on the phone...
Why is it worse than drunks?
Well, when we look at crash risk, the crash risk for someone who's just talking on a cell phone is that they're about four times more likely to be involved in an accident. When you're text messaging, the crash risk goes up to eight times. And for comparison purposes, someone who's drunk at a 0.08 blood alcohol level has a four-time crash increase. So talking on a cell phone, it's about the same as driving drunk. Texting is a lot worse.
So David's going to show us the pictures you have with you today. Show us.
Okay, one of the things that we know when people are talking on a phone is that they get into kind of a tunnel vision. And so you see in this image here what someone would look like if they weren't distracted. And then they start talking on a cell phone. If you look at the next slide, you'll see that they start looking straight ahead and all the information in the periphery, kind of they're not looking at their side mirrors. And so
this is the equivalent of what, talking on the phone?
This is the equivalent of like talking on the phone. You don't see the information in the periphery. So if there's a car, a pedestrian, or something like that, you just don't see it.
And the reason you don't see it, explain it to our audience, is because your brain won't let you.
That's right. You suffer from something called inattention blindness. And so if you look at this next slide here, this is a scene you might see if you're driving. We know that when you're looking at things, and your eyes are out looking at the windshield, you don't see it. So the next slide will show you what you would see perhaps if you're on a cell phone. About half of that information is removed. It could be a stop sign. It could be a pedestrian. And so this inattention blindness makes us drive in a way that makes it worse than drunk driving.
And the reason for that is literally the way your brain works. Your brain can't take in all of that information and also be taking in the information from the phone and you talking on the phone. Your brain just can't do all of that at one time. That's what you're saying.
That's right. We're just not wired to multitask in that way. We think we can do it. We simply can't. And we're deceiving ourselves if we think we are.
Yeah. So you're missing something.
Quite a bit.
You're missing quite a bit. Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, David. We'll be right back. But first, watch this stunning and disturbing, infuriating report.
In 2008, a San Antonio bus driver was caught on video driving through rush hour traffic while texting away on his cell phone. He glanced up from his phone a split second before slamming directly into the car ahead. Weeks later, while a school bus carrying 21 young students was stopped with its flashers on, a truck driver rammed his 18-wheel semi-truck into the back of the bus, pushing it over 200 feet before the bus burst into flames. 20 of the students escaped, but tragically, 13-year-old Margay Ski was killed. The driver admitted he had been distracted by his cell phone and didn't see the bus had stopped.
71% of people between the ages of 18 and 49 admit that they text or talk on the phone while they drive. That's according to a recent survey. Now, if you're one of those people who think that you have got the safe texting and driving thing down, that you're better than everybody else, and that nothing like you've seen here today could ever possibly happen to you, well, my next three guests are right there with you.
Meet Sean, a father of four.
I think I have mastered the skills of texting behind the wheel. It'd be interesting to see something that proves me wrong.
Carly, a stay-at-home mother of two.
I've been texting before and have caught myself in the other lane, which is not good.
And Jen, a 19-year-old college student and self-proclaimed super texter.
Yeah, I text all the time when I'm behind the wheel.
We wanted to gauge just how super texter Jen.
Driving without the wheel. Oops, that was a cone. That was not good.
Next, our confident multitasker, Sean.
Wow. Oh, no. Got a cone.
And finally, stay-at-home mom, Carly.
Oh, jeez. Dang.
So we just got done analyzing the data, and what we found is really going to shock our participants.
When we were doing the cone test, I was not in control whatsoever. It was scary. I feel like my behavior while I was texting and driving would not be safe for the road.
The test was very hard. When the brake light came on and I realized that was a car, I just had an accident. Until this point, I thought I could master both skills of texting and driving. It is definitely a wake-up call.
I wanted to respond to the text and also was trying to not run into the grass. I've been very lucky that nothing has happened to me or, you know, my kids because of me texting and driving. If everybody went through this test, they would see why they should not text and drive.
Okay. The top bar is reaction time, 40 miles per hour baseline, and the below that is texting. And you see a 22-foot difference between the time you hit the brake pedal. You know, that's 22 feet. Very easily be the difference between a close call and one of the stories we've heard today.
On that tape, you said, I have been texting and I looked up and saw myself in the other lane.
No. It's embarrassing. It's absolutely changed my life since that driving test.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like I'm incredibly lucky that nothing has happened to me or my children or someone else.
I thought I could do it, I'm going to admit, because everyone in my age group, from high school and college students, everyone is doing it. And I guarantee if all across America, all the teenagers that went through what I went through, I'm 120% positive they wouldn't be texting or talking on the phone, because that text or call about whatever it is we're talking about these days isn't worth your life, let alone like someone else's.
But weren't you pretty cocky about it before?
Yeah. I could text without looking. I did that 80% of the time behind the wheel because I thought I could do it.
Oh, you were pretty cocky. Pretty cocky about it, saying, you know, I feel pretty confident I can do both. Yeah.
I was really cocky about it. My wife would always tell me, say, you know, you have our family in the car, you have our kids, you're putting them at risk. And I would look at her and just be like, don't worry about it. I got this. I'm a great driver. I can multitask. And when I took that test, it was a big, big wake-up call. It was a surprise, because I went into the test thinking that, you know what, I'm that guy you're talking about. You know, I can do it all. When I got out of that car, I realized that could have been me up there losing one of my kids, losing my wife, because I didn't pay attention. So when I got home, I put the phone down. I haven't texted while I was behind the wheel since the test. So,
I've wanted to do this show for a very long time, and it is my prayer that this show, this day, will be a seminal day in your life. Let it be the end of you using a cell phone or sending a text message when you are behind the wheel of a moving vehicle. Don't tempt fate. That text or call can wait. Believe it. Thanks, everybody.
Kind of shakes you up, doesn't it? The best thing that you can do, sign the pledge. Get your friends and family to sign the pledge. This is going to be aired with the PWAB meeting. That's one of the reasons we wanted to do it this way. I am going to try and take the message to the high school. I've also sent it to all the other mayors in the county. We're hoping to do this countywide. It's so important. So please spread the word. Talk to your kids, your friends, your families, and let's have no phone zones all over Morro Bay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Janice, for bringing that. That was very powerful. It'll be interesting to see if we get any sort of feedback, how that comes. Really powerful stuff. All right. So there is no further public comment. Moving on to the approval of minutes of June 16th. Would anybody have any changes to make, or would anybody like to make the motion?
I make a motion that we approve the minutes from our last meeting.
And I second it. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Moving on to director's report. Jenny, do you have anything you would like to ask of Rob in the director's report?
Nope.
All right. How about you, Bill?
Thank you.
Yes. There's a lot of letters in the paper, and
make his recommendation to the board and city council, to the Cayuga Sanitary District Board and the Morro Bay City Council. Staff has also had an opportunity to go to the Santa Paula Wastewater Treatment Plant and viewed their MBR facility there. Also, we are invited by the community of Mountain House to come up there and see a little bit older PERC design plant to see how it operated. A little bit different design. That was one of their modified sequencing batch reactor plants. We will be compiling a report to give to the board and council at the appropriate time.
Are there any licensed engineers involved on the PERC side?
Yes, they have a design firm called Pace Engineering. Respected designers. We met with their designers. They're great process people, so it will be an engineered. It is an engineered plant. Really, that's all the comments I have at this point until we're able to give that information to the council and Cayuga Sanitary District Board.
I know that's not quite in the director's report, but before we move on, Bill, that was a good enjoinder. Rob, how would you like the public to come and approach? Who should they go to the joint meetings? Should they call your office? How should people who aren't necessarily up to date on all of this, what would you recommend that they do to kind of fast track it?
Well, we have our website that has wastewater treatment plant information. They can go on the public tours that Councilman Smuckler brought forward. Come to the JPA boards, express their opinion there. PERC has a website that they can visit. If they want to drive almost 5 hours. Mountain House is also a PERC plant. They could see a little bit different perspective than the city of Santa Paula's plant. I wouldn't recommend, unless you're going up there anyway, driving to Mountain House.
So there are options. Jenny, you had something to add?
Yes, actually, I'm inviting the community. It was going to be a small party, but why not? Everybody, come to my house. I'm having an awareness-raising conversation on Thursday, August 26th, at my home on Napa Avenue from 7 to 8 p.m. I personally went down to Santa Paula and looked at the plant down there, and it's just a dialogue that I'd like to I noticed many of my friends aren't up to speed or have questions, so this is a place to come to talk about it, have questions answered, look at some pictures maybe. Again, it's Thursday, August 26th from 7 to 8 p.m. My phone number is 234-7279. That's 234-7279. And I live on Napa Avenue, but call me for this specific address. Just seems wise to do it that way. And again, you're all invited Thursday, August 26th. I have a big living room. We can all chat about it for an hour at 7 p.m. That's one way.
Okay, and likewise, the JPA meets the second Thursday of each month. So the next one, is that the September 6th? No. When's the next date? The second Thursday of each month. For those of you out in the public who want to, because this is coming to a head, and how many more months before this all we're going to be deciding on this, Rob?
Like I said, the CDR will be coming in sometime early September.
So the 9th.
That'll be a draft CDR, so the PERC staff wanted us to review it, ask them any questions, then they could present their final CDR to the board. Probably at the October meeting is when we anticipate that would come to the board. The second Thursday in September
is the 9th.
Also, tomorrow, this Thursday, there is a JPA TAC board meeting, and I've lost track. At 1 o'clock here at the Vets Hall, we alternate with Cayucas, and so I don't want anybody making the same mistake I did a few months ago and assuming that it's here and have 5 minutes to get to Cayucas.
$30 million. And that's a lot of money for our community to be spending, and I think everyone should know how, you know. So I heartily invite you to my home or to any of these opportunities to learn more about the sewer treatment renovation rebuild project that is going to happen. It's not if it's going to happen. It is happening. It's just how do we want to go about it and for how much money. Thank you.
And so the more information I guess you get it here at PWAB, at the JPA meetings, and knowledge never hurts. A little knowledge might hurt you, but a lot won't. Would anybody else have any comments on the director's report? Richard? Jim? Rob, I had a couple. Right now, I've been going by the desal plant. Are we running the desal plant right now constantly or
periodically? We're running the desal plant because we're in our summer season, so we need to. We have a higher demand for potable water in the city during the summer season, so we are supplementing that with our brackish water reverse osmosis plant.
And I see that state water deliveries are up. But my I guess I talk about the desal plant because I know it costs us a good deal of money to start that up. So when we start it up, we just keep running it?
We keep running it, even
if we use the water or not?
Well, we'll use the water. We can kind of use the state water as kind of a battery and bank a little bit of that. So we'll bank a little bit of state water, run our desal plant, shut our desal plant down. We can take higher deliveries of state water. So we're balancing that act.
I guess my point of my question I didn't express so well was we start the desal plant, we get a lot of state water, we shut it down, and then but we have to pay a good deal of money each time we start it up, or how does that work?
Well, once the reason we have to pay a lot of money once we start it up is because of we're bringing another water source online, and it requires significant lab testing. It's the startup costs aren't power costs or higher operating costs other than the lab work that's required.
No, I see. I guess so. I see the crux of my question is you only have to pay for the testing once in a time span.
Correct.
That's okay. That's where I'm getting confused. And then you get a 1 year.
I'm not sure of the frequency. Some of the testing is monthly. Some of it's quarterly. Some, with our water system testing, we do on a daily basis. So,
okay. Thank you. Perfect. That's just what I needed. Next, I see under the stormwater category, we have, I thought that this would be kind of a good public service moment. The annual creek clearing is commencing. And do you have the dates for that, Rob? And if someone wants, could you give us the dates and the creeks that we're going to help clear?
It's as you know, our maintenance division is no longer under Public Works. It's in our Recreation and Parks Department, so I'm not sure of the exact dates. Our annual permit allows us to get into the creeks, do basically hand trimming of vegetative growth between August and October. So it'll be scheduled during that time. We're trying to coordinate that with the CCC crews or we contract with the California Men's Colony for some additional labor. So we'll coordinate that so we can get some additional labor out there. We clean Alva Paul Creek, Morrow Creek, Willow Camp Creek, and is it Unnamed Creek or No Name? North Morrow Bay, yeah. No Name Creek, yes, thank you. So that'd be the creek that comes down through that's Alva Paul, Paul Creek. North of there would be, yes, exactly. Yeah, so on the Yerba Buena is on the east side, and down through would be on the west side.
Well, now that maintenance is in the rec department, we can maybe make some sort of sport out of this. And out there in Morrow Bay, we need your help. The recreation department does, and I'll put it in their hands. But if you want to go clear creeks in Morrow Bay and help get out all the trees and brush and whatnot, hopefully there's not too much trash. But the city does need your help. So
let me just add a little bit to that. We hold the permit from Fish and Game. It requires some pretty specific type of work, so a homeowner really can't go down into the creek on their own unless they want to pursue a permit from the California Department of Fish and Game fund that program.
And I have to interject. What about the drainage ditch, the stormwater drainage ditch between the high school and the cloisters? I know that that gets really backed up with debris.
That's on high school property, and our permit does not cover that channel. It's the 54th Street drainage channel is the official name of of that. The high school the school district has done it in the past, but the city does not work on that.
Just because at certain times with rains that can get really backed up with all sorts of stuff, not just on high tides, on full moons when we have a really high tide. All right. Does anybody else have any questions about the director's report? June.
Just a little bit of clarification on that creek cleanup on a residential property. Is the homeowner required to pay that?
No.
So it's an option.
It's completely voluntary.
So if they don't want the creek clean that's on their property, they're not willing to pay for it,
we don't touch it. Yeah.
So it's totally up to that homeowner.
Yes.
So you could have along a creek a section done and not done.
Correct, and that's typically what happens.
That's my next question. Do most people want that? I would think they would want it because they don't want the water to back up into their property.
A lot of people want it. A lot of people don't want to pay.
Interesting. Okay, and then you said the creek behind the high school is called 54th Street?
54th Street Drainage Channel.
Okay, and what's the creek called that goes through Del Mar Park?
Alva Paul? Is it Paula or Paul? Do you know? It's either A-V-A-L.
Uh-huh.
Can I email that to you?
Sure, okay. Or just give me a close approximation.
I think it's Alva. It's two names. It's somebody's
Alva.
Name. Uh-huh. Alva Paul.
Okay, Paul. Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you.
I'm sorry for those relatives of that who's that creek's named after for butchering the creek name.
Didn't mean to put you on the spot there. Okay, thank you.
I do want to highlight one more item on our director's report, and that is our North Main Street bike lanes project will be coming to the City Council this coming Monday for a recommendation that we award the construction contract to the apparent low bidder. Cal Portland is the company, and their bid was $432,117.10 for that striping and paving work that'll happen on North Main this fall. The bids range from that as the low. I think the high was around $590,000+. So we had a good range. We had 10 bidders on the project. Our engineer's estimate was right around $480,000 for the job. So, and our grant from through the ERA project is $480,000 for the work we have, and then we have an additional $60,000 in TDA funds, Transportation Development Act, and city bike lane money that we're going to put towards that because we have to pay for some construction management activities that'll be associated with that.
You mean we've got $100,000 more than? Is 432 available?
Yes, approximately.
Well, that's...
Yeah, we're getting really competitive bids these days. The Cal Portland is what used to be Union Asphalt. Union Asphalt was bought by Cal Portland, and they're using a couple of local firms as subcontractors, or proposed to use a couple of local firms, Williams Engineering and Toast, for their trucking operations.
And that will cover from Yerba Buena, how far south?
To 41.
Great.
The overlay section is from Yerba Buena to just north of San Jacinto.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be the striping will cover the entire reach. And as you remember, we were able to accommodate the parking by reducing the travel lane width and using a combination bike parking lane in those critical sections. The very north end, because we have such narrow right of way up there, will be no parking, basically from a little north of the buoy, basically in the island streets. That'll be no parking along Main Street there.
And what ended up happening with the property, the parking in front of Lolo's?
That we were able to preserve by reducing lane width and using a combination, a Caltrans standard for the, you use a 12-foot.
I'd also like to, I know Janine isn't here tonight, but I'd like to thank her for giving us the information way ahead of time so we can have plenty of time to look at it before we're talking about it next meeting.
I'll relay that. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, so get ready, Morro Bay, and we hope to see you in September. That ends our segment on the director's report. We move on to new business. Ms. Brantley is going to be talking about the Main and San Jacinto intersection, something that is important to my life also. So without any further ado, Jenny, it's all you.
Thank you, Matt. This was an item that came up before the Public Works Advisory Board maybe 9 months or so ago, and we talked about that street, the San Jacinto thoroughfare, and how possibly changing the speed limits there or putting stop signs on San Jacinto. And out of that conversation, it reminded me how I felt about that intersection and maybe some improvements that could be made there, whereby traffic gets fairly backed up at certain times of the day. There's sometimes mayhem and confusion. Not tragically, thank goodness, but I did take a friend of mine who is a licensed traffic engineer from Caltrans, and we spent about an hour looking at the patterns and the overhead. Thank you so much, Rob, for bringing the photograph of the existing intersection. And I'm not sure how I guess I can point to it. Oh, no, I can't because of the microphone. I'd like to point on there. It's on me. Okay. Well, we've got in front of us a photograph of the existing intersection. My memo to the Public Works Advisory Board is in three sections, so let's go through it as I've presented it. Here on the southbound Main Street, you're good. So southbound Main Street, right there. If you can see, what we've got currently is a stop sign next to a large teardrop-shaped island of vegetation. And the stop sign, that's it. It's one lane with a stop sign. It occurs to me that there's room for a right-hand turn lane. I've always wanted one of these. Thank you. So right here, it occurs to me that there's room for a right-hand turn lane, even as it exists right now. I don't know. I didn't get out there with a tape measure. But to allow for cars that are going straight here to pull into a lane to go straight and for cars that are turning right to get out of that lane and turn right. My Caltrans engineer pointed out that there's lots of room here also if we wanted to kind of shave off a foot or two or three off of this berm to create more space. June, you had a question?
Just a comment. Yeah.
Yes, there will be a bike lane.
No, I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Only on that side.
Both sides of the street, there'll be bike lanes.
Yeah, southbound. So is there going to be any shaving of this?
No, that we didn't propose to do any widening there. The actual overlay.
Point the red button.
Yeah, the actual overlay starts about right there. So this was just proposed to be restriped to add the bike lane.
Okay. So what I looked at with my engineer friend was this area being taken away a little bit. It's a very thick island. So that was proposal one, or an idea, just an idea. And as I mentioned at the very bottom of my memo, these are just to kind of get a conversation going and to see if anything's possible, if anything's even needed. I don't know. I'm not married to any of this, but they're just ideas that I have. So one would be to create a right-hand turn lane. In order to facilitate the area here, which is where the clogging really occurs. The clogging happens when some cars want to turn left. They can't get across into this little left-hand turn lane. It occurred to me that we could possibly scooch this line over, and that's the technical term, scooch it, to the south a little bit, create a third lane there. Right now there's two lanes. See how there's three lanes up here? Continue that. Continue three lanes into the entryway to Highway 1, creating, as I demonstrated or as I drew on this diagram, my little drawing on the back of our memo, to create three lanes, a left-hand turn only lane, one only lane up across the other way, the other side of San Jacinto, but that seems pretty minor to do. The other concern I had in this whole intersection is this right here, the northbound traffic from Highway 1 going northbound, making a right-hand turn here. As some of you know, people make this cross here. It's a widely used crosswalk, pedestrian crosswalk. Then people walk around this little berm and take the crosswalk here to continue into the neighborhood. People coming off the highway with the right-hand turn, if they've got the green light, they can just continue straight in here and loop around to go southbound on Main to go to restaurants like Lolo's. I do it all the time. You go, but if you're coming off the highway at 55, you're supposed to slow down, I would think, but maybe you don't. You've got the green light, you whip around here, and there's nothing really stopping you from just continuing flowing through southbound onto Main Street. It occurred that perhaps we make a longer lane there to allow for more slowing down. That would be maybe a big project, to elongate this right-hand turn only lane. I don't know. Maybe there would be a directional arrow. It was something that was suggested by my engineer friend, was to have there be a no right turn on red also. So at least during the red light, there's not going to be anyone crossing that crosswalk or the other crosswalk when pedestrians are feeling protected by the red light. They know they're protected. At least there's no one going to be turning that right turn while no one else can cross that intersection northbound anyway on a red light. Why should the red... So that was just one easy suggestion, no right turn on red. So these are the thoughts I had. The main one, the biggest one, is this big one in here, creating a third lane in here, creating more stall space, if you will, for cars waiting for that light to turn, especially when they're traveling southbound to Highway 1 South. Does anyone have any questions? Go ahead, June.
I have a comment. I really appreciate all the work you've done.
Thanks.
Thinking about this. You don't live in that neighborhood, and I'm so impressed that you know that intersection so well. I go through there probably a couple times a day, most days. So I'm very familiar with it. I think the most dangerous situation there is the northbound Highway 1 people getting off the freeway, turning right, and coming through that intersection. It's not only people making almost a U-turn onto Main, it's also people going up San Jacinto. They come through there at a high speed. You can also have traffic crossing on Main. Cars start out to go across there. It looks clear, and suddenly there's a car coming off the freeway.
Right.
And then the guy coming off the freeway doesn't know who has right-of-way, and they may already be in the intersection, the other cars. So, and they don't have a stop, the freeway exiter. So I think that is really dangerous because I was thinking that your right turn on red was a great idea, but I was not thinking it all the way through that on a green light, people still can do that.
Yeah, so I don't know how to resolve that.
Something
when they're
to
at
say
high speed.
Slow down, something to make them slow down. But anyway, I think out of all the situations you're looking to alleviate here, I think that is the most dangerous, the most likely to cause an accident with a pedestrian or another car. So I don't have any further solutions other than what you have, but I think that it's really good we're looking at that. And then the other comment is I think your idea of either having two or three lanes in that intersection to allow people getting on to Highway 1, you know, the crucial area there, even if it was only two delineated lanes and the right-hand lane could go straight or right, that would work. Or left, if they could also go. I don't know if that, you know, I don't know traffic laws. But if they could also go left, because the congestion happens with people coming into that intersection wanting to get on the freeway, mainly going south.
Right.
And they come from three directions.
I mean, correct.
Yeah. They come from three different directions. And at traffic hours, like we really have traffic in Morro Bay, but we do have more traffic sometimes than others. Then cars get backed up on all three directions waiting to get through there. The light turns green and maybe only three cars get through. And then everybody else has to slowly creep forward into that middle area. So if we had at least two lanes that could turn left onto Highway 1, I think that would help a lot. Because instead of everybody funneling into one lane, now you've got two lanes. It seems like logic.
Section there between the cross of San Jacinto and Main Street, because of the Caltrans right away. No, this is a great idea.
Yeah, I think it was back further here.
But as a person, I mean, I've crossed in the last 10 years. I go down there all the time with my kids, and I always make sure not to put our bike tires past the white line because of those cars going around that corner. And I remember when I was a kid, there wasn't a light there when I was small. And we used to cross that street. You know, just imagine kids nowadays trying to cross that street. And
People texting.
Well, yeah, but people texting, but thank God there are no cell phones.
I guess the question I have is, how do we cooperate with Caltrans? Do we just say, oh, it's Caltrans's property, there's nothing we can do? What is the collaboration process that
petition the Lord with prayer?
Rob?
I think there's maybe a more terrestrial approach to that.
And do we think it's worth it? Is it worth pursuing?
Yeah. I think, you know, first we start a dialogue with our local MPO, which is SLOCOG, our municipal planning agency, and with our Caltrans local assistance folks to see what funding sources are available, because it's probably going to cost a few dollars to do this work. So start that dialogue with our local planner, Gayska at SLOCOG, and local assistants and perhaps their design staff about that, and get ourselves on a project list. That's thing right now. They're funding so far out in time because the dollars have become so restricted. I mean, we're talking at our technical advisory board meeting for SLOCOG. We're talking about projects in 13, 14, 15, 16 now, and not even having enough regional money to fund everybody's projects. So we're all the cities and county and Caltrans are kind of in competition for this limited dollars that become available. Local matches help. We do have, you know, our Measure Q, which certain portion is allocated towards our road projects, so that can help out with a match towards that larger project, whether it be the striping solution or some other solution there. I see this all the time, too. In fact, I've found myself, if I'm going north-south and not on the freeway, I might detour a couple blocks to the east to just avoid the situation. That's not the best approach to it. And as June pointed out, if you commit to coming through this intersection here, you can be hanging out at about this point, it's happened to me, and somebody comes whipping around this corner that you didn't, because they are, you know, a quarter mile back by the time you commit, and they're at freeway speeds, everybody tends to get surprised at that point.
Is there any possibility of having right-hand turn lane off the freeway where you have to stop, even if it's a green light? I mean,
we'll have to talk. That'll be Caltrans ops. Their traffic operations folks would do that. And at the risk of offending my Caltrans brothers and sisters, their goal is throughput on their main line to keep the main line moving. If they can get somebody off fast, that keeps the main line moving. They don't really care for signals on their main line.
Huh. And Highway 1 is a main line.
Yes. In our circulation element, one of the options that they looked at in the 80s was, you know, making overpasses at these locations. But with the limited funding, those are very expensive projects. Just the revisions to Los Osos Valley Road are in the tens of millions of dollars to make those changes at Los Osos Valley Road and 101. and that's just widening an existing situation.
Are we? Do we have any further comments? I'd like to. Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to ask if anybody else on the board would support my idea and Jenny's idea that this is an important issue. I think this intersection is highly used, and it's also dangerous the way it's laid out now. So I do.
There's a couple of options here. It can be kind of a grassroots effort, or if council directs us to put something like this on our work plan, you know, we will go back to pursuing options at this intersection. But a few years ago, this was taken off of our work plan.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Thanks for the presentation. It was a nice job. Okay. With that, we move on to old business. There is none. And so we go to future agenda items. And we have four that are listed. We have pavement management plan, coming from you, Rob, city facility tour, and I'm thinking, is that for members of the various advisory boards or for PWAB?
I think the intention was that was to get the PWAB or Public Works Advisory Board on a facilities tour, because I think some folks haven't been in a while or have never been on a facilities tour. We're down a couple of members. I don't know if we want to hold off until we fill the vacancies. Pavement management plan, the status of that is we're a fairly small engineering department here, and we can handle one or two projects at a time, so that's kind of slipped off to the back burner while we've been focusing on the North Main Bike Lanes project, but that'll be coming back onto our work program to get to the advisory board and ultimately to city council, because that's a very important. It really sets the stage for how we manage our street resources for the future. Next month, I think we're planning on, you know, transit only, transit for next month's meeting. And the October meeting, I believe we wanted to talk about water conservation and the water billing program. We've been trying to get that on the agenda for quite some time.
And we've been talking about having some sort of presentation of the new internet-based
that's
billing.
Exactly what.
So we're looking at October for that?
Probably October for that, since next month will be a, like I said, you know, all transit meeting.
About dial rate, yes.
Yes.
Okay. I have something. It's just this sewer treatment plant conversation seems to have come up. Do we want to have some sort of presentation offered to us here at Public Works Advisory Board from someone educated in that conversation?
Well, our next meeting is the 15th, mm-hmm. and by then we would have, Noah, as you're listening, we would have done both of those trips to different do you have a plan in terms of bringing that information back to PWAB, or are you going to take it to council?
At this point, the idea was to be able to take that tour, some sort of a report that was available to the community, and yes, perhaps the Public Works Advisory Board would be a good forum for that, to discuss perhaps some of the highlights. I've planned on having some discussion at the JPA meeting between our council and the Cayucos Sanitary Board. I'm open to ideas there. I definitely hope that we'd get good participation in those tour dates. And if a couple of the PWAB members, if you do attend those tours, perhaps a little bit of time to review what you saw and just to help create more awareness in the community about the project, I think would be interesting. But I'm open to ideas as to what you think would be the best way to go forward on that.
Well, coming from it from the community advisory board standpoint, my position on the board is to get the we get the information and we try and push it out there. And being that this is a big one, and we're all talking about it, we have a JPA meeting on the 9th. and they're probably going to be talking about it. Correct, Rob?
That'd be correct.
And we have these dates for these trips that all happen up until the 9th. So you would probably have the information for your JPA meeting on the 9th. Is that the decision, or are they still talking about it, Rob?
I'm not sure what the agenda we wouldn't be making a decision on the PERC proposed CDR at that point in time, because we would have just received it and not a chance to really get it to our board members. And we have a consultant that's going to be doing a comparison of the projects. They wouldn't have had a chance to review it.
Rob, I'm sorry to interrupt. When did you say you were going to get that?
On or about June, or excuse me, not June, September 6th.
Okay, so right before
that, that's Labor Day. I would anticipate it probably coming on the 7th, not on Monday the 6th. And then the meeting is the staff was directed to work on the approved project while also working on a proposal from PERC to receive something from them.
Okay, so instead of getting into it now, which isn't the proper place, then I guess, Noah, and everybody, if anybody can contradict what I'm saying, we could do those two trips to those two different water plants and come back to the next PWAB meeting and have a small presentation. Couldn't we not?
That September 15th meeting was intended to take the transit public testimony, so we wouldn't really have the opportunity to do the PERC proposal at that time. Really, the emphasis for wastewater treatment has always been with our JPA. Those are the meetings that tend to get, that's where we get all the information out to the public, is at our JPA meetings.
Well, understanding that, you're right, but if the agenda's already been set for that one, I don't know. What does everybody think about this?
Are the JPA meetings televised?
Yes.
Oh, they are. Okay. So there is an opportunity for the public to watch.
And to attend.
And to attend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And comment.
Mm-hmm. So you could then, I mean, it gets feasible then. I guess what I'm saying is there's a venue from public comments to show what happened in these two trips. That's all.
Correct.
Okay. If that makes sense to everybody, then I'll back off. Okay. All right. The next meeting, then, I guess we'll be talking about the transit system on September 15th for future agenda items. And so, folks out there in Morro Bay, that's going to be September 15th at 3 p.m. in the multipurpose room on Kennedy Way. Hope to see you out there.
Also, a reminder that if you're going to take transit, mention to the driver that you're going to be attending the meeting, and it's a free trip to the meeting and back. So,
and is that on their regular route, or are they going to have to call ahead to?
Either way, they can. If they need to have a flex trip, they can call ahead and get a free flex trip to the meeting. Or if they're able to make the regular route. Both would be provided free.
Okay. Thank you. Wonderful information.
Okay, sir.
That concludes this version of the Public Works Advisory Board meeting. And do we have a motion to adjourn?
You don't need one?
All right. We don't need a motion. And so the meeting is over. Thank you. And we will see you. Oh, sorry. We do have someone to comment.
I was very much interested in this Oprah's no phone zone, and if there was some way of getting a copy of that video we saw, I have several people I'd like to send it to. I don't know if that's available or not.
I believe the entire 45-minute long video is available as a YouTube video or some such on the website, and I can send you the link to that website. I'll send it out to all the board members.
Thank you. I'd appreciate that.
Okay. And so that does it for this version of PWAB. And we will see you next month, September 15th. Thank you.